Abdul Latif al-Ghanu after his tent was bombed in Jabalia al-Balad, north of Gaza. At least 6 civilians were killed and several others injured in an airstrike on the vicinity of a mosque in the Nusayrat camp in central Gaza. An attack on another mosque in the same camp killed 5 civilians. Fatalities were also reported after the regime's airstrikes targeted tens of displaced Palestinians in Al-Zawaida in central Gaza. Israeli air and artillery strikes also targeted the southern cities of Rafah and Khan Yunis. The attacks come as the death toll from the Israel's renewed aggression since last Tuesday has reached 830. The overall toll from the genocide in Gaza is nearing 50,200, with more than 113,800 others wounded. The regime has also issued fresh evacuation orders for thousands of Palestinians in Gaza City, telling them to move south. Our Gaza correspondent Moti Abu Musabe joined us earlier with the latest updates on Israeli attacks across the blockaded territory. Let's take a listen.
Unfortunately, the deadly and destructive Israeli strikes and attacks are still ubiquitous, targeting various parts of Gaza and taking more lives of the Palestinian people a short while ago. Another wave of the destructive airstrikes actually was carried out against different parts of Beit Ahyasiri in the northern section of the besieged enclave. And as you know, those attacks were carried out in conjunction with the intense and heavy artillery shelling maintained by the Israeli occupation forces and Israeli tanks, actually, that are still attacking different parts of Beit Ahyasiri. And needless to mention that several airstrikes were carried out also against the western parts of Gaza City as well. And here in the central area of Gaza Strip, as you know, the Israeli tanks are opening the gunfire these moments towards the Palestinian people in the eastern part of Al-Maghazi refugee camp. And I would like to remind you that over the past couple of hours, the Israeli occupation forces committed one of the appalling massacres in Al-Nusrat refugee camp after the Israeli fighter jets targeted a makeshift tent of the Palestinian people there, in addition to a charitable as you know, spot that at least left more than 11 Palestinian civilians dead, in addition to dozens of the injuries. The current situation is still jeopardizing for the Palestinian people at all levels. A lot of ongoing and non-stop Israeli attacks that are still hitting different parts of Gaza Strip, and until this moment, the Israeli occupation forces are still intensifying their attacks against the Palestinian people. And even when it comes to Rafah City, the current situation is still precarious for the Palestinian people.
The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees has warned that Israel continues to block most attempts by humanitarian organizations to bring essential supplies into the Gaza Strip. UNRWA said the regime's prevention of aid delivery comes as the besieged territory is on the brink of unprecedented famine. It noted that essential supplies in Gaza are running critically low and may only last a few more days unless shipments resume. UNRWA stressed that the current situation in Gaza is deteriorating as Israel's renewed strikes continue into the second week. The UN agency emphasized that there is a near total collapse in all aspects of life in Gaza. It underlined the urgent need for a ceasefire and the entry of thousands of aid trucks, stressing that anything less than that would be a death penalty for Gaza's infrastructure and people. Political analyst Wilmer Leon joined us earlier. He said the main goal of Israel and the United States is to ensure no Palestinians remain in Gaza.
The oppressor, being the Zionists, are trying to exterminate the Palestinians. The Palestinians' objective is, in terms of in the Hamas construct, is to live to fight another day. And so every day that Hamas is still in existence, every day that Palestinians are still in Gaza, is a day that the Zionist government has lost the fight and they are losing the argument. So I don't think it's Donald Trump's idea that's being imposed upon Israel. I think it is Donald Trump has bought into the Zionist idea of exterminating the Palestinians. What we're looking at in terms of Israel and the Palestinians is the replay of American colonists back in the 1700s and 1800s as they attacked the indigenous Native Americans in this country. It's the same play. We've seen this movie too many times. So the whole idea of all we want is security, that's a cover for, in their minds, the only way they can feel secure is if there are no Palestinians remaining in Palestine.
The Hamas resistance movement has released a new video message highlighting the threats posed to Israeli captives in Gaza due to the regime's ongoing onslaught. Hamas warned that continuation of Israel's genocidal war means an unknown fate for the captives. The video included a previously released footage from the Qassam Brigade showing two Israeli prisoners pleading with the regime to end the war. Hamas called Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu a war criminal who is driven by an insatiable thirst for blood, with captives being his first victims. The movement said Netanyahu seeks to engineer ceasefire talks to stall and buy time. It is stressed that Netanyahu resumed his war of extermination against defenseless civilians in Gaza in violation of the ceasefire agreement he had signed, showing a photo of Israeli prisoners killed in the regime's violent airstrikes. Hamas emphasized that return to negotiations equals the release of the Israeli captives. Palestinian and other resistance leaders and officials have addressed the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza and other regional developments in messages issued on the occasion of the upcoming International Quds Day. They have also highlighted the significance of this event, which is marked on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan, a day dedicated to showing solidarity with the Palestinian people worldwide. Let's take a listen to what they had to say.
At the end of my speech, I underscore the following. First, the unity of the forces of resistance in the region will continue, whatever be the sacrifices. Number two, the Palestinian people will continue to stand resilient on their territory, holding on to their territory, and will not accept any other alternative other than this territory. Number three, the Islamic Jihad movement in Palestine will continue to live up to the pledge, to its pledge, to the martyrs and its principles, and to the martyrs from amongst the Palestinian people, and it will continue to commit to the unity of the forces of resistance against the aggression. Number four, the forces of resistance will continue to commit to their firm stance of liberating all of our captives in exchange for the captives of the enemy. And in addition to that, the withdrawal of the enemy's forces from all the territories which they entered into the Gaza Strip. Commemorating International Quds Day on the final Friday of the month of Ramadan is of great significance. It is a declaration, a renewed declaration of the unity of the Ummah and its commitment to the central cause. And in light of what the region is witnessing, the major developments taking place after the Battle of Al-Aqsa Storm, and the American Zionist aggression in a dangerous and brutal way on Palestine and the region, the importance of this day is increasing to underscore that the Palestinian cause, and specifically Al-Quds, will continue to be the compass for struggle and uniting the people against the occupation. The aggressive course of the Israelis with the American partnership, this is in order to achieve a clear goal, striving to eliminate the Palestinian cause and an attempt to displace the Palestinian people from Palestine. And this is clear in the statements and the declared stances and statements from the Americans and the Israelis. I underscore that we remain committed firmly to our stance based on principle and based on ethics and values in support of the Palestinian people in whatever way we can. The resistance took the initiative with the storm to reestablish the equations of the conflict, which will not go backwards. the clock will not turn backwards, and the resistance has proven its ability to take the initiative and to go on the offense. Thank God. It showed the world the incapability and the security military failure of the Israeli enemy and its inability to break the will of our people and their resistance despite 15 months of fighting or killing and terrorism and destruction, despite the complete full-fledged support from the United States of America for the enemy and the open-ended political cover which is provided in order to commit war crimes and genocide and starvation and the assassinations. God Almighty honored us with Imam Khomeini, may God have mercy of his soul, who changed the face of the region and launched the project of coherent efforts to liberate Palestine and the army of 20 million to liberate Al-Quds. He declared a day for Al-Quds, and it is a declaration of the responsibility of the Ummah to stand with Palestine and to support Palestine and liberate Palestine. The axis of resistance, which was sponsored by Imam Khomeini, may God preserve him, on the same path as Imam Khomeini, may God rest his soul. The central aim is to support the resistance to confront the occupation.
This year, we are honoring the Day of Al-Quds in a way that, a group of tyrannical criminal entities are doing every criminal act possible against the innocent people of Palestine. But on the other hand, the innocent nation of Palestine have kept their composure. They've stood up to the enemy and defended the land in an unprecedented way.
Iranians are getting ready to celebrate International Quds Day. Our correspondent Gisumi Shahmadi has spoken with a number of Iranian people to get their views on this year's Quds Day. Here's what they had to say.
Participating in the rallies is both a religious and a human duty. Just like all Muslims around the world, we will join in solidarity with the Palestinians to show our support.
I hope that one day, very soon, we can hold mass prayers together with Palestinians and they will achieve victory.
I will definitely participate in the rallies. It is my duty to support this cause.
This day is essential for us, and the issue that concerns Muslims worldwide is Gaza. Therefore, I not only pray for them, but also actively participate in the rallies.
The Palestinians are part of us, and we will always stand by their side.
The Palestinians fighting against oppression should know that they have our unwavering support.
Divisions in Israel continue to escalate since the Al-Aqsa flood operation as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu tightens his grip on dissenting voices. The latest developments include high-profile dismissals and mounting criticism over Netanyahu's handling of the war on Gaza. Our correspondent Naga Hamed has more from Ramallah.
The political landscape in Israel is in a turmoil, as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's ruling coalition is facing intense internal strife following his decision to fire Shin Bet's chief, Ronin Bar. The dismissal, followed by efforts to remove the attorney general, has fueled accusations that Netanyahu is stifling opposition and avoiding accountability for security failures. Bar, in a defiant move, vowed to remain in office until all Israeli captives are returned from Gaza and a formal inquiry into October 7th incidents is established, something Netanyahu's cabinet strongly opposes.
The dismissal of Shin Bet chief Ronan Bar reveals an internal power struggle in Israel, with Netanyahu seeking control over security and judicial institutions. Bar was a key figure opposing the continuation of the Gaza war, advocating negotiations with Hamas. His removal is seen as part of Netanyahu's broader strategy to silence dissent and tighten his grip on power.
With Bar out, Netanyahu's next target seems to be Israel's top legal officials.
This move signals a shift toward greater authoritarianism as Netanyahu replaces officials with loyalists willing to prolong the war. Critics warn that Barr's ouster weakens security and accelerates political instability.
As Netanyahu tightens his control, Israel's internal crisis threatened to reshape its future, both politically and militarily.
Netanyahu's push faces growing opposition, especially after dismissing key figures like Ronan Bar and Minister of Military Affairs Yoav Gallant. Bar's role was crucial in defending Israel's representative system, and his removal sparked massive protests. Netanyahu's actions are seen as an effort to solidify absolute power, evade corruption charges, and secure his political survival, all amid the ongoing Gaza war.
Netanyahu's struggle for control continues to stir tensions, as critics warn of the dangers of undermining checks and balances in the regime.
As Israel's political crisis intensifies, Netanyahu faces growing pressure both from within his cabinet and from the public. With mounting calls for accountability, the coming weeks will be crucial for the prime minister's political future. Naqa Ahmed, Ramallah, Occupied West Bank.
And that's a wrap for now. Thank you. And bye for now.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Let's listen to the famous reciters of the Holy Quran in the month of Allah. Brother Muhammad Reza Birya, only in IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. In this segment of the show, the months of Allah, we're going to talk about famous reciters of the Holy Quran in the Muslim world. Sheikh Sayyid Mutawalli Abdul Al was a very famous and good reciter of the Holy Quran. He was born in 1947. He memorized the Holy Quran when he was young, and he learned the rules of tajweed after memorizing the Quran, and also the maqamat. He first followed the style of Sheikh Mustafa Ismail and Abdul Basit, but later he invented his own style of recitation. The voice of Sheikh Mutawalli Abdul Al is a very clear voice. It is not a hoarse voice, because, you know, some reciters, they don't have a clear voice. Nevertheless, their recitation is very good, but their voice might not be as clear as some other reciters. Sheikh Mutawalli Abdul Al had a very good voice and a clear voice. He also had a very long breath when reciting the Quran. He was able to recite two lines or three lines of the verses of the Holy Quran with one breath. He also had a good lahn. Lahn means using the melodies and maqamat of the Quran artistically. And Sheikh Mutawalli Abdul Al, he was very skilled in using the maqamat. And he had the three registers in his voice. He had the qarar, jawab, and jawabul jawab. Sheikh As-Sayyid Mutawalli Abdul Al believed that a reciter must not imitate the style of another reciter. At the beginning, he said it's okay. But later on, they should develop their own style of recitation. For example, a reciter might begin imitating the style of Sheikh Abdul Basit, but he should not continue, he or she should not continue using that style. He should be able to develop his own style of recitation. And this is what Sheikh As-Sayyid Mutawalli Abdul Al emphasizes. Now let's listen to Surah Ash-Shura, verse 15, recited by Sheikh As-Sayyid Mutawalli Abdul Al.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Falidhalika fadha. فَلِذَٰلِكَ فَذَّ وَاسْتَقِمْ كَمَا
So to that religion of Allah invite, O Muhammad, and remain on a right course as you are commanded, and do not follow their inclinations, but say, I have believed in what Allah has revealed of the Quran, and I have been commanded to do justice among you. Allah is our Lord and your Lord. For us are our deeds, and for you your deeds. There is no need for argument between us and you. Allah will bring us together, and to Him is the final destination.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atar, the host of this program. This series of the program Viewpoints is mainly concerned with the speeches and thoughts of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, also known as Imam Khamenei. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Shaykh Ali and Sayyid Mohsen. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, thanks for inviting.
So, and Shaykh Ali, assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So, very recently, in one of the speeches of Imam Khamenei, he talked about a very important concept, which is Jihad al-Tabyin. And so many people in Iran, inside Iran and outside Iran, were shocked by this, we can say, type of look at the world and at the concept of jihad. Because this is the first time that this term has been coined by the Rahbar, and he used it. So now there are so many, we can say, explanations, commentaries, and interpretations written on this concept. Of course, Rahbar, in his speech, gave us a very nice framework for Jihad al-Tabyin. But this is good to be more familiar with this concept, maybe for the English-speaking people all around the world through this radio show, Viewpoints. So for today's discussion, we want to talk about the correct methodology of practicing Jihad al-Tabyin, also the tools which are required for this type of jihad. Shaykh Ali, let's start with you, brother. First of all, what is the method or methodology of Jihad al-Tabyin?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As we have discussed before previously, that Jihad al-Tabyin is the jihad of clarification, the jihad of explanation. And we have said that the leader of the Muslim Ummah, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has announced it to be in context of the Islamic revolution and the Islamic system, that pure Muhammadan Islam, that is the extension of the movement of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam and Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam. Now, discussing about this methodology of Jihad al-Tabyin, there are, like in every other field, there could be different classifications and different ways yes. one can approach this divine jihad. But one thing that has to be there is the element of enemy, mm-hmm. right? So the first and foremost ingredient of this methodology is recognizing the enemy, who the true enemy is. Unfortunately, sometimes because of our shallow understandings, we decide an enemy yes. for ourselves, which is not really the enemy of Islam.
Rahbar has called us Dushman Shanasi.
Dushman Shanasi, right? Recognizing yes. the right enemy. So yes. I'm gonna speak about four points when it comes to the methodology mm-hmm. of Jihad al-Tabyin.
Okay.
So first one is recognizing the enemy. The second one is noting down the propaganda of the enemy, mm-hmm. where they're attacking.
Okay.
Number three is research for truth. And number four is engagement.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one, like we already said, you know, dissecting different layers of enemies. You know, when we talk about enemy, it's not just this one monotonous and one singleton body.
Yes.
No, it is a multi-layered phenomena. Some enemies are your staunch enemy, really staunch enemy. Some are, you know, milder than the staunch enemy. So there's a tashkik, there's a credibility that exists when it comes to enemy and recognizing the enemy. So for someone who is engaged in Jihad al-Tabyin, it's important to take a look at all of those layers of the enemies and select the layer that he can engage at. That's the first one.
And the enemy you are talking about is the enemy of Islam.
It's the enemy of Islam,
but not the enemy
humanity.
Of the different interpretation of Islam, is it?
No, see, enemy of Islam, when we talk about the enemy, right, whose job is it to declare an enemy. Uh-huh. Let's go back to the time of Prophet Muhammad, okay, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, right? Because this is our, our point where we begin.
Yes.
It's the Prophet of Islam who defines who the enemy at that time is,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
Similarly, you go through the times of Imams, it's the Imam of the time who defines who the enemy today is.
Yes.
And now you come to the era of Wilayatul Faqih, which is the extension of Imama and Wilaya of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salatu wasalam.
Okay.
So today, the Waliul Faqih, the Wali Amr al-Muslimin, the leader of the Islamic Ummah, he defines who the enemy is. And today it's Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei who defines who today's enemy is, right?
Okay.
So this is recognizing and dissecting different layers of the enemies.
Yes.
Number two is noting down the propaganda of the enemy. Remember we said previously that jihad has to be in response to an enemy. If it's not in response to an enemy, it's not jihad tabyin in this context.
Mm-hmm.
It may be a good thing to do, but nothing of this category that we're discussing today.
Yeah.
Identifying the lies of the enemies. What are the points that they're lying about? So mm-hmm. if I were to make it a bit more tangible, you know, in times of this war on Syria.
Yes.
Right? They said, oh, Bashar al-Assad, you know, he is doing this. Bashar is doing this with his people. You know, lies and propaganda through mainstream media, right? So at that point, it is important to know where the enemy is attacking us, right? And then getting into this whole arena of clarification and defending those points where the enemy is attacking us.
Yes.
Then identifying the schemes and plots of the enemy. It's important, you know. Yes. It's not just one act or one statement. No, you need to look at the holistic picture, their framework. Because at the end of the day, when the enemy plans to attack us, they have this whole, scheme behind it. It's not just, you know, just say this word or say one sentence or this one point.
It's very much complicated, that's right.
It's much complicated, right? It's multidimensional, as we say.
That's right.
So identifying that. The third one was researching for truth. Mm-hmm. And this is very important for all the soldiers of the soft war or the officers of the soft war, as the leader called them, to research for truths, right? It's not enough to have good intentions and just jump into the arena. You have to be well-researched, well-versed, and well-knowledgeable before you can engage.
That's right.
Right? So this research part, you know, how can we do it? So let's say if you're a college student or a university student, you're like, how do I defend the beliefs of Shia Islam? I'm studying accounting at my school, right? Mm-hmm. This is where, you know, I'm breaking it down for you, right? This is where you consult with the SMEs, the subject matter experts.
Yes.
Right? Which includes revolutionary Islamic scholars and researchers.
That's right.
You go, you take time, you read their content, their works, right? Those who are the subject matter experts. And that's going to equip you, empower you. You may not have to do research from scratch for yourself. You can just refer to them, you know. And one of the subject matter experts, and the best one is Khud Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. Mm-hmm. He himself,
okay.
Right? Take his arguments.
Yes.
Learn from him.
Okay.
The second is collecting relevant data.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we have these concepts, but we don't have the proper statistics. So when we do analysis, we are weak in our analysis. And sometimes we make mistakes. So collecting this relevant data before engagement. Remember, the fourth step is engagement.
Yes.
It's really important. You need to be properly equipped. Verifying your facts and figures. Right? A lot of times we get data and we become so excited that we're so ready to engage, right? But, you know, it turns out that your data had discrepancies, right? It was not verified and it was not properly researched and confirmed. So verifying the facts and figures is important.
Okay.
Arranging your argument to come up with an engagement strategy. See, just having the data and dumping the data out is not going to do any justice to the cause. It's not going to serve the purpose. You have to have a proper engagement strategy developed, which takes thinking. Again, you refer to subject matter experts and see how they're doing it, right?
Yes.
And I'm talking to youth at this point, right? Scholars, of course, they have to research. They have you know, a lot of responsibility on their shoulder. Last but not the least is engage. And when you're ready with all this stuff, you preferably engage as a team. And I think In one of our programs, it was mentioned by you or Sayyid that, you know, engaging as a team is important.
Yes, teamwork.
Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei has said, kar bayad tashkilati bashad, that the work has to be a teamwork.
Yes.
Right? So this is something, it's a golden principle, not just in Jihad-e-Tabyeen, in many other areas too.
Yes.
Now, if you haven't done number three properly, which was what? Research for truth.
Research for truth.
If your research is not good, yes. I humbly request not to engage.
Okay.
Because you may create some more confusion otherwise.
Yes.
So have mercy on you and on the movement. You know, don't engage. Don't rush into it.
Don't you think Iran is alone in this field?
I don't think Iran is alone. Iran has the support of public, right? The governments may not be there,
okay,
right? Because of the hegemony of the United States mm-hmm. of America and the Zionists and the British and, you know, their the other European
yes.
thugs,
yes.
as we call them,
okay.
right? They may be a conglomeration at the governmental level,
yes.
at the governmental apparatus,
yes.
but Iran has the support of the general masses. So here,
okay.
with the Jihad-e-Tabyeen,
yes.
what the leader of the Islamic Ummah has done is
yes.
he has besieged.
Yes.
You know, I'm using a Farsi
mobilizes.
Word here. He has mobilized
yes.
the masses. The ordinary people.
That's right. But Sayyid, you know, why am I saying that Iran is alone? Because we got so many Muslim lands and the countries nowadays around the Islamic Republic of Iran, you know, these Arab kings and aristocrats living over there. Okay, that it seems that they are working for the enemy. I mean, a puppet in the hands of the enemy. Their slogans is better. Their normalization with the ties with the Israel is another step that they're taking.
And this is something I'm going to mention afterwards.
So I do want to say, even inside the Islamic land, the key holders of the Kaaba and the Mecca, I mean the Wahhabis and all these kings over there, okay, are hand in hand with the enemy of Islam. So is it at all true to say that Islamic Republic of Iran is alone? Or no, maybe this Jihad-e-Tabyeen can also attract some people out of the borders of Islam, for example, Christians, Jews, those who are after the social justice seekers across the world, those people who believe in the concept of the last savior, for example, okay? What's your answer to that?
Well, I think because the Islamic Revolution was based on the pure Mohammedan Islam, and the difference between this country, which is Iran, obviously we know it as the Islamic revolutionary country, not the Iran, the state only the, as in Iran.
Okay.
It's a revolutionary country and it's an Islamic revolutionary country. Therefore, we can see that because the main aim was to gain Islam, to have Islam in this country, to apply the pure Mohammedan Islam in this country. That's why we can see it is on the front foot. And we clearly see Iran being engaged with all these things.
Yes.
But on the other hand, we cannot say it is just Iran. Other people, other countries are also involved, not at the government level. For example, you know, whenever something happens against the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam or the Quran, the very first people which we see who have, you know, protests and all those things, it always happens in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people themselves. Not the government. I'm not talking about the governments right now.
Yes.
Within the people, we can see, and the Supreme Leader also has said, the belief that the Pakistani Muslims have, they have a firm belief on the Quran and the Prophet.
Yes.
You know, if someone says anything to the Prophet or the Quran, they, according to their beliefs, they do protest. Whether it's happened in the France or in any other part of the world, they stand against it. So we can see people doing that, but because the governments are not sincere, because the governments are following the, you know, the strategy that are set by the capitalist, by the capitalism.
Yes.
They are following a different system yeah. within the Islamic State, and they just have the name of the Islamic State. That's why we cannot see these countries, these governments, or the rulers of these countries being with the you know, on the front foot.
Yes.
On the other hand, we can see, like, for example, the example that you gave for the Ahl-e Saud and all those,
yes.
they're just pretending to be the Muslims. You know, the land which was free of the idols, which was free out of the, you know, all the non-Islamic rituals and all those things, they are just doing that again. They just brought that again. They're like killing people. They finance ISIS. You know, all these things, this shows that they're not the true followers of Islam, but they are the puppets who have been, you know, plotted mm-hmm. in these countries.
Yes.
And as Trump has said about them, that it is a cow which I milk.
Yes.
You know,
the milking cow.
Yes. So what you can expect from such a person, from such a ruler.
Yes.
So even we can see the war on the Yemen. You know, when the matter of Palestine comes, no one talks about it. No one raised their voices against
the media coverage is really weak
in Israeli regime.
Yes,
whereas it is only now we can see even the Israeli, you know, embassies being open and their army men are being, you know, taken into the service for different countries.
In Jerusalem?
They're recruiting.
Recruiting the naval, you know, the naval chief has been recruited in Bahrain.
Okay.
I think.
Yes, yes, yes.
So when we see all these things, the very first enemies of Islam, the clear enemies of Islam who has oppressed the Muslim Ummah from last 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this history is not a less history. We can see what they have done, how they're controlling the whole media, how they're propagating the Islamophobia in the world. But the silence which we see from these Muslim, we can say like states, it shows us that the rulers of these states, they are so-called Muslims. They're just pretending to be the Muslims, not the real Muslims.
Yes.
And this is the matter. On the other hand, when we talk about the methodology and tools of the the jihad of the clarification, the very first thing is obviously, as brother has mentioned, the very good points that we should recognize the right enemy, mm-hmm. Dushman Shinasi. And we know that there's a term which is used in the Quran and it can be used in all the times for the enemies, and that is taghut,
mm-hmm.
rebels.
Yes.
Taghut is a good term for all the times.
Aggressors.
You know, thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen.
Welcome.
And Sheikh Ali, it was very kind of you for a nice explanation regarding Jihad al-Tabini and its definition. It was very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Yankalav Islam page. Also, our YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. Till another episode, God bless you. Fi amanallah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Fruitful moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
In the limelight.
Technology billionaire Elon Musk has lashed out at US judges as they rule against his Department of Government Efficiency. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered the story and tells us more. In the days after a federal judge ruled Elon Musk's dismantling of US aid likely violated the Constitution, the world's richest person issued a series of online attacks against the American judiciary, offered money to voters to sign a petition opposing activist judges, and called on Congress to remove his newfound legal opponents from office. Elon Musk wrote on Wednesday, 19th of March, "This is a judicial coup," and he asked lawmakers to impeach the judges. Elon Musk, who serves as a senior advisor to Donald Trump, posted about judges who ruled in opposition to the administration more than 20 times within 48 hours this week on X, the social network that he owns. He repeatedly framed them as radical leftist activists, and he sought to undermine their authority. His denunciations came as his so-called Department of Government Efficiency faces sweeping and numerous legal challenges to its gutting overhaul of the government, which has involved firing thousands of government workers and gaining access to sensitive government data. The Department of Government Efficiency is a subject of nearly two dozen lawsuits, which in some cases have already resulted in judges imposing more transparency on Elon Musk's initiative or reversing parts of its rapid fire cuts at federal agencies. The legal pushback poses one of the most significant challenges to Elon Musk's plans, which for weeks after Inauguration Day involved operating with expansive powers and little evident oversight. While Musk posts online, he is also directing some of his immense wealth towards those who support his cause. Musk donated funds to seven Republican members of Congress who called for impeaching judges, the New York Times reported, giving the maximum allowable donation of $6,600 to their campaigns. Elon Musk also launched a petition on Thursday, 20th of March, against activist judges via his political action group, America PAC, which offered registered voters in Wisconsin $100 if they signed. Elon Musk's America PAC
has funneled millions of dollars into the state's 1st of April Supreme Court race, in which he's backing a former Republican attorney general in another attempt to reshape the country's courts. Elon Musk's campaign against judges has intensified amid a wider clash between the Trump administration and the judiciary over the rule of law, following court decisions who push back against the administration's mass deportations of immigrants. It follows long-standing behavior from Donald Trump to rail against judges that have ruled against him in cases concerning his businesses or personal matters. The White House's fight with judges escalated to the point where John Roberts, the Supreme Court Chief Justice, issued a rare public statement on Tuesday defending America's judicial system. John Roberts wrote, "For more than two centuries, it has been established that impeachment is not an appropriate response to disagreement concerning a judicial decision. The normal appellate process exists for that purpose." Elon Musk, however, responded to John Roberts in a post on X, formerly known as Twitter, just one day later. Elon Musk wrote, "For more than two centuries, there has never been such extreme abuse of the legal system by activists pretending to be judges. Impeach them." Labor groups, watchdog organizations, and former government workers have filed lawsuits in response to the Department of Government Efficiency's blitz through federal agencies in late January and February, alleging that Elon Musk's initiative acted without legal authority and violated laws on privacy and transparency. Although the justice system's response is not as rapid as the breakneck pace of Department of Government Efficiency's cuts, several of the cases against Elon Musk's efforts are now beginning to throw up roadblocks for him and his team. A federal judge in Maryland ruled on Tuesday that Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency's shutdown of USAID, the agency that provided humanitarian aid and one of the first in Elon Musk's crosshairs, was likely unconstitutional. The justice ordered the Trump administration to halt terminations of employees and reinstate their access to certain computer systems. Department of Government Efficiency had dramatically taken over the agency in early February and moved to close its operations, which Elon Musk boasted involved feeding U.S. aid into the wood chipper. Judge Theodore Chuang found that Elon Musk's actions at the agency likely violated the Constitution, given his role as an unelected advisor who did not undergo Senate confirmation. Department of Government Efficiency faced another setback on Thursday as a different Maryland District Court judge temporarily blocked Elon Musk's team from accessing Social Security Administration systems. A lawsuit against Department of Government Efficiency argued that granting access to millions of people's personal data at the agency violates privacy laws and represents a security threat. Another district court ruling last week ordered the Trump administration to reinstate probationary workers who were fired en masse at 18 government agencies, while a separate case compelled Elon Musk's team to produce internal records about its staff and operations. As Elon Musk and Donald Trump officials have ramped up their attacks on judges, multiple justices told Reuters news agency earlier this month that U.S. marshals warned them they are facing unusually high threat levels against their personal safety. Elon Musk has reacted to the court decisions with outrage and unsubstantiated accusations that the judges are rogue activists who must be stopped. On X, the Tesla CEO has amplified far-right influencers who have called for impeaching justices or targeted specific judges in posts. An activist judge is no judge at all, just someone wearing a costume, Elon Musk responded to a post from right-wing commentator Matt Walsh that suggested Donald Trump should go to war against activist judges. Elon Musk has also received support from foreign leaders who have attacked their country's judiciaries and challenged the rule of law. He responded with a 100 emoji to a post from the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that claimed when a strong right-wing leader wins an election, the leftist deep state weaponizes the justice system. Benjamin Netanyahu attempted in 2023 to weaken the power of Israel's judiciary, prompting nationwide protests and fears of a constitutional crisis. El Salvador, where President Nayib Bukele's party ousted all Supreme Court judges in 2021 as human rights groups warned about a slide into authoritarianism, has become a repeated point of comparison for Elon Musk. He retweeted a post from President Bukele on Tuesday that claimed the U.S. is facing a judicial coup and repeated that language himself in later posts on X.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: an Israeli airstrikes in northern Gaza kills Hamas spokesman Abdul Latif al-Ghanu as the regime's genocidal war rages on unabated across the besieged territory. Hamas releases a new video saying Israel's war criminal prime minister is putting the captives' lives at serious risk by resuming violent airstrikes on Gaza. And also coming up, Palestinian and other resistance leaders and officials highlight the significance of the International Quds Day, which is dedicated to showing solidarity with the Palestinian people. The Israeli regime presses ahead with its aggression against Gaza, killing more